I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. And today, I would like to talk a little bit about the value of freedom. Now, that seems, I guess, a strange kind of a thing as a concept, since as America, we're free people, right? But obviously, there are huge segments of our population that do not feel that they actually do live in freedom. And I think we need to consider that and think about that. Are we living in freedom, or is freedom a concept that has maybe disappeared a little bit? Maybe it's really not a real thing anyway. I saw a funny meme on social media, and it was using the characters from Forrest Gump, Forrest and his friend who were on the boat, the guy who liked the shrimp, made the Bubblegum Shrimp Company in the movie. And he says, first he was telling him in the movie, if you ever watched it, Forrest, there's all kinds of way to do a shrimp. There's fried shrimp, there's grilled shrimp, there's lemon shrimp. Well, this is going, Forrest, there's all kinds of taxes. There's income tax, property tax, sales tax, construction on your house tax, change your car tire tax. And he went on and on and on. And that got me to thinking, with all the taxation that we have to live with, all the concerns we have for our finances, which we've seen have been crippled during this COVID-19 pandemic, are we free? Can we actually live free under these kind of circumstances? I mean, we have people shutting us down in our states, telling us where you can and cannot go. We have our governors usurping power right out from under the United States Constitution. As we've spoken here a couple times, the governor of New Jersey, Governor Murphy, was asked one time by Tucker Carlson on Tucker's show. He said, when you came up with all of this lockdown and keeping people in and wearing masks and all, did you ever consider the Bill of Rights? And he said, no, I never did, Tucker. That's way beyond my pay grade. I never even considered that when trying to figure out what I was doing, which I found personally shocking, because you would think that the head of the government in your state or in your nation, the very first thing they should be concerned about is, they all take an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States and of their state. And that's their number one job, is safety and security and protecting our rights. If not, we get stuck with a runaway government, which we're starting to see. And that's where the whole idea, what is the value of freedom? Do we have freedom anymore? Are we living a free life when we can be basically told you can't leave your house? You can't run your business. If I want to take a chance and go to the gym, maybe I'm stupid to go there and work out at the gym. But aren't I free to do that? Isn't my health my concern? Isn't that one of the things that the people in the abortion world all talk about? My body, my choice? Well, in this case, they're telling you absolutely not. You can't go, and you take that mask off. A lot of places are coming up with laws now to lock you up, put you in jail if you don't wear the mask, if you don't comply, right? Which is kind of funny, since they're letting prisoners out of jail because of COVID, but they're going to lock up people who don't wear the mask who are outside and put them in jail. So when they put them in jail, do they have to immediately let them go because of the danger of COVID? This is a cyclical charade, And for anybody who's very concerned about the virus, I'm not making fun of the virus. If you have certain health conditions, if you're a certain age and you contract COVID or the flu, the regular old flu, you could certainly die. And I'm not making any light of that. And I know lots of people have died. It's a horrible, horrible situation. But the problem is, we don't know that we're getting true stories. I mean, I look at Dr. Fauci, and he is touted as this great expert. Now, is he touted as a great expert because he's a tremendous doctor? Or has he ever been wrong? Well, I think if you look back to, February and March, and we can see he was saying that this COVID-19 was not that big a deal. We didn't need masks. We just needed to take our regular precautions. Now he's saying, you better wear a mask. You better wear a mask everywhere. So he's been wrong on quite a few points. But he's considered the expert because, I think, because he has quarreled with the president. And if you quarrel with the president, you become a darling of the media and of the left. And whether you're right or wrong, you are now considered the gold standard for whatever it is you're talking about if it goes against President Trump. Now, that could be right or wrong. I'm not saying either way. If President Trump is wrong about something, he should be called out on it, like any of us should. But when we see we have lists and a list of doctors who come forward and they talk about their concerns about the virus not being as life-destroying as Dr. Fauci and his crowd might be saying, those doctors are treated as pariahs. They are blocked from social media because anything other than the official, I don't want to call it the left-wing line, but the official COVID will kill you line, anything other than that is shut down and silenced and pushed to the side. So recently we had that large group of doctors who came out and they wanted to say we should take it easy on these restrictions. We should open up the country again. We should start figuring out how we can move forward, and they're silenced. If their video ended up on social media, it was immediately pulled down by some of the large groups that are out there, which is funny because they say they don't arbitrate truth, but they'll take things down that they say are not true. So isn't that arbitrating the truth? Unless, of course, they have some information they would like to share with the rest of us. So that's kind of what led me into this whole idea is, are we free? What is the value of freedom? How much do you value freedom? We see a lot of our young people, and that's a constant conversation that I try and have, because our young people are going to take over our country. It's going to become their world, and we're going to spend our golden years living under whatever it is that they decide they want for us. So later on in our program, I have my son Jack. He's just turned 17. And he's in the middle of this pandemic. He's a senior in high school this year, looking at college next year. And I'm going to bring him on, and we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, how it is to be a 17-year-old kid in the middle of this pandemic, and what are their concerns? Are they worried about it? Do they talk about it? How's it affected their lives? And what will school look like for them, for their point of view? I know here we're having lots of talks about the teachers' unions, who are saying our job is not to babysit your kids and put our lives in danger, so therefore we shouldn't go back to class. Well, if they're going to catch the virus and die, I could see their point. But we don't have definitive facts on it. We know that it's out there, and if certain people get it, they will die. But what is it, 98% recovery rate? Now, I know. I've seen all the funny sayings. You know, 2%. How would you like to be part of the 2% that doesn't recover? I don't know. If you go out in your car, you have what? A 20% chance of getting killed in your car every single day? So do you want to be part of that 20%? You better stay out of your car, because that's a huge risk, right? 20%, you could get killed in your car. And is that enough to take our freedom away from us? I don't know. I'm struggling with this. You know, months ago, my wife Kathleen and I were on here talking about this, and we had declared that we were tired of it. We couldn't stay in anymore. Not that we wanted to go out and have huge parties. We wanted to go out and get a cup of coffee. We wanted to be able to go out and get something to eat. We wanted to be able to travel somewhere, to go somewhere and do something. And we were looking at just before Memorial Day of just doing it. Well, the world started to loosen up around Memorial Day. So that was a good combination. But our freedoms are still restricted. And the more we think about that, look how easily they managed to restrict us. You know, one of the things that we see out there is there are some militant people about the mask, and militant about, you know, how you can interact with each other. We call them the jump back people. You know, you walk in somewhere and they jump back as though, you know, you got live COVID, you know, with baring its teeth, and you're going to throw it at them, and they, oh my God, get away from me, and they physically jump back from you as though, you know, this COVID is pouring off of you. We see people fighting over the mask, physically fighting over the masks. I saw a video the other day, which I thought was horrific. There was a woman, older woman, and she was at one of those self-service cash registers, and she's got the mask on with the big cover over the top of her. And a young woman, probably half her age, comes walking up to get something next to her. And the older woman saw her next to her with no mask on, and she turned around, picked up her cane, and pointed it at her, screaming at her, get away from me, get away from me. The young woman, you know, grabbed the cane, threw to Kane and then grabbed the older woman and threw her down on the floor. And the lady broke her leg and then she laid there. And then people just walked past her. They didn't even help this old woman who was laying there, which that's a whole nother thing for us to discuss as a people. What the hell is going on here when we see things like that? But that's something that's our freedom. I mean, we're not free to go in the store without being accosted. We're not free to go down the street without, if you don't have your mask on, they're going to lock you up. If you have a business, you're not free to open your business. You're not free to go to a lot of places. You know, you can't travel. We were supposed to have a family reunion this summer, and a lot of the family is from down south. They're from Florida. We got some people from Alabama, and they're on the list. If you're from that place and you show up in New Jersey, you better lock yourself down for 14 days. Well, I don't know that they're going to have the lockdown police coming around knocking on my door, but, you know, you got to fill out forms. Recently, I was in upstate New York, and I found it very interesting that while in upstate New York, we went to a restaurant. And you're allowed to go in restaurants and eat indoors in upstate New York. I guess they're in phase four. We went into the restaurant. You had to wear your mask when you went in. You had to put your mask on before you went in the restaurant. You go in. They sit you down at your table. I guess it's half the number of tables they normally have, but there's people all around. As soon as you sit down at your table, you can take your mask off. So you and everybody sitting at tables in the same room has no masks on. If you get up to go to the bathroom or to go look at something on the wall, you got to put your mask back on. And you're sitting there saying, what is the difference between sitting at this table here, 16 feet from the table of people over there who have no masks on? But if I get up to go to the bathroom, I got to put my mask on. Isn't that air circulating around through that entire place? Isn't that kind of what's going on? So that was kind of strange. You kind of ask yourself, does that make sense? I mean, I could see if they said it's airborne and, you know, breathing out, sneezing, talking loud can send the COVID all over the place. We have to all wear masks all the time. That makes a lot more sense to me than saying, wear your mask till you sit at the table, then you can take it off. But if you get up to go to the bathroom, you better put it back on. That doesn't make sense. That's part of the problem with all of this. None of this makes any sense. And that's where the restrictions on our freedom come into be. And you have to ask yourself, does this really make sense that my freedoms are being restricted like this over something we can't get a straight story because it's been politicized? It's been completely politicized, and therefore you don't know which way to go. And of course, just like if you want to figure out, well, who benefits from this control of the population, this shutdown? Well, the only thing you could say is November 3rd. That's the only real thing you can say is November 3rd. Why isn't there some big giant study that comes out and says definitively masks will protect you or masks will not protect you? We see Dr. Fauci is going to throw out the first baseball at the start of the season. And he comes down, nobody on the mound but him, nobody around for 90 feet from the guy. And he's got a mask on. He throws the ball. But 15 minutes later, he's up in the stands talking to three people sitting right next to him, and they all got their masks off. Well, what's the deal, doctor? Do you need a mask on or do you not need a mask on? You know, it's a restriction of our freedoms. It's part of what we have to look at. So that's kind of what I wanted to get my theme in here today is how we're doing that. Along those lines, we see Attorney General William Barr was testifying in Congress the other day. Did anybody see that sideshow, that freak show? If the idea is to get answers, right? You're going to have these congressional committees because they want to get answers to things, which is what they said. And he volunteers to go in there to answer questions about his role in the Trump administration, whether or not Trump is instructing him to do things, whether or not they're using the Justice Department as a political weapon, kind of like President Obama did with his attorney general. Remember, he was going to be the wingman for the president, right? Not a word was said about that. How can you be the wingman? You're supposed to be an independent, right, serving in the administration. But anyway, my point being is Attorney General Barr goes up there, and he was asked a question by one of the Democratic congresspersons. It was really a long-winded diatribe that was fashioned to sound like a question. And as soon as the Attorney General started to answer, he was interrupted, so he couldn't get his answer out. it got to be absurd to watch these people up there, because really all they want to do is they want that time to spew their point of view. You know, they want to tell you how horrible this man is, and they want to say that we know you work for Trump and you do whatever Trump tells you to do and you don't care about the Constitution, you're against the people. But in reality, we don't know any of that because they wouldn't let him answer. You know, the whole ridiculous, I reclaim my time, I reclaim my time. You sound like blithering idiots. You know, this is the United States government. You've asked the Attorney General to sit there and answer a question. You might not like his answer. His answer may provoke more questions from you to kind of narrow down what he's talking about. But to just constantly cut the man off because you really don't want to hear his answer. You want to accuse him of things. You want to set up sound bites that you can use later on, whether it's advertising for you or for your party, to say we had this Attorney General there and you have not answered the question. And that becomes a sound bite. When in reality, when you see the whole thing, he kept saying, I'd like to answer your question. I reclaim my time. I reclaim my time. Well, since you can't answer this question, we're going to move on. Never giving them the opportunity. This is where we're all being played. Watching that should have been something that, if we had a real media, that would have been the topic for days. That would have been the topic of the Sunday shows, talking about how inappropriate is it for our Congress to have a fact-finding committee meeting, bring in a witness, and ask the witness pertinent questions so that we can get a real understanding. But we don't do that. We use it as a sideshow. It's a freak show. So people can go in and just make their comments, bolster their political position. It does not help any of us. And it was very sad to see. I can imagine, you know, countries around the world watching that and seeing the rioting, the looting, the burning, the violence, the killing in our streets, and then seeing our political leaders act like complete imbeciles up there. You know, how would that give any confidence to anyone who would see America and say, you know, they're having some problems, but boy, they really got themselves together. Do you think that when you see these things? And I know both sides do it, but nothing like what our Democrat friends do. You know, but the whole impeachment thing was made up. We know they spied, all of this. And where are those stories? That's part of this whole problem. That's attacking our freedom. Are we really free when we have a media that will not tell the truth? Are we really free when we have politicians that do not take that oath and that dedication to the Constitution, no matter which way it goes, for them or against them, but they don't take that dedication to the Constitution seriously? That becomes an afterthought. An afterthought, as long as their political purpose is made. That is a corruption. And I've talked about that so many times. And it's happening right in front of our eyes. And the question is, are we waking up? Are you afraid of your freedom being taken away? Do you feel it's been taken away? Or do you feel you're empowered by all of this nonsense and the danger that's coming on November 3rd, right? If Trump wins, I think there's going to be open warfare in the streets. Not from the right, but from the left. I think they will lose their mind and there'll be open warfare in the streets. If Joe Biden wins, I think our country starts down a road that we probably will not be able to recover from. But we'll talk about that and a lot more when we come back. For more Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network.
Did you know the average person spends 26 years of their life sleeping? The real troubling statistic is that we spend 7 years of our life trying to get to sleep, struggling with racing minds, tossing and turning. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Sleep is proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance. Until now, most sleep supplements haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
All right, and welcome back to Chasing Justice with your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. Now, as we all live in this pandemic and we're trying to figure our way around here and how we're going to function, what we're doing, because it's going on and on and on, whether it's a real danger to us, whether it's a mild danger, whether it's being played politically or not, the reality is many of our lives are shut down. We're still in New Jersey here. We're in lockdown. They're threatening to lock us down again. New York has a list of 72 places that you can't come from. You have to sit still for 2.5 weeks to make sure you don't have it. We can get testing, but the minute you walk out of the testing place, you could get the virus and nobody would know just because you have a negative. We got people that are jumping back, like that's what Kathleen calls them, my wife, the jump back people, that they see you coming and your mask is not on before you walk in the store and they jump back, you know, violently as though, you know, you're going to dispute a COVID all over them and kill them. You see people riding around in cars with, looks like they got underwater tank diver equipment on inside their own car by themselves. So it's a very strange place we find ourselves in, and it's not going away anytime soon. Although the prediction is that it goes away November 4th, of course, the day after the election, which, before we get into this segment and my guest that I have with me here, I'm going to say that November 4th is going to be an interesting day. If Joe Biden wins, it will mark the final chapter, I believe, in American democracy and any attempt at a economy we will have for the next 20 years. If President Trump is reelected, the real fighting and the real danger will start the very next day, as our friends on the left absolutely lose their minds and go all out to destroy what they can of our country. So the pandemic, it has created difficulties for people I know, my own life. You know, you can't go out to a restaurant. We're doing the outdoor eating, which is nice. We can do that. But it's hot out. So you're going to sit in a restaurant and swelter on top of your steak because you want to go out to a restaurant. I don't know. It's really a strange world. So I figured, what's the better thing to do? Listen to me just complain about it? Or go and find somebody out there in the world that I know and trust, and in this case, that I love very dearly, who is in the middle of this as a young person. So I would like to introduce my son, Jack Pangaro. Jack has been on the show before with his friends that they call the Fam, a group of really great young men, good, decent patriots. They all are. Recently, I put a picture of Jack up on my Twitter account to show you the all-American Jack Tate, because I'm very proud of him. He is a very good and decent young man. Jack, how are you today?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for being here. And, you know, from my intro, you can see kind of what I'm looking for from you is, you know, at 17 years old, you just got your license, right? And did you get your license right away as soon as you turned 17? What happened there?
No, I turned 17 in the beginning of April, so just when the lockdown started, and so I had to wait 2 or 3 months, and then I got it in the beginning of July. So I had to wait, I think, just under 3 months.
That was, as anybody who remembers when you get your license, what a feeling of freedom that is. It's a change in your life. You know, it's something that really makes a big difference. And to have this lockdown, I know I watched you, and, you know, every day we were trying to figure out, when is DMV, Division of Motor Vehicles, when are they going to open up? When can you take a test? When can you do whatever? What was that like waiting for that? Was that really annoying, or was it something you just dealt with because of the whole situation?
Well, I think it helped that there was nowhere I could go anyway, even if I had the license. But I did have to wait for a few weeks while I started going back to work, having to get rides everywhere. And so it was definitely frustrating not to have it when I had been 17 for 3 months. I'd been driving for a year and a few months at that point. And so when I finally got it, it was definitely a big relief. And then I felt like that's when the summer could really start.
Well, that's good. Now, and that's a good point. That's what I really want to hear from someone your age. I know what it's like for me. You know, I'm working from home. You know, I can travel a little bit in the tri-state area. You know, I have offices in two states, and I can go back and forth. And there's states that allow each other to cross mingle. So, don't anybody panic out there. But it's hard, to not be able to go anywhere. What's that been like for you and for your friends?
I think the hardest part has been being alone for so long, being locked up in our houses. I started back up working again about a month ago, and that's been really great, getting out of the house every day. And then my friends and I, they'll come over and we'll have a fire outside. And so it's been really great to be able to actually see each other and be able to hang out and not have to be stuck by ourselves with just our families for so long.
Sure. It's a little bit more of a reconnection, but that was a long time. I mean, you and I were just talking about it yesterday. It's been months since this happened, and it feels like really a long time when you think about it. And then it kind of went fast too, right? Because you're kind of just stuck in the same house for months and months and months, and that's got to be difficult. And how's any general feeling from the rest of the guys you hang out with? And
well, I think most of them are pretty over it. I think when it started, everyone was kind of excited. We thought we were going to get a week or two off school, and then it turns out that it kept going. And when we found out the school was going to be locked down for the rest of the year, the general consensus was we'd rather be waking up at 5:30 and going to school every day than be stuck at home by ourselves for 2 or 3 months.
Now, that's interesting, because you would think that most younger people would say, hey, school's closed, no problem. But that's not you and the guys that you hang out with. You're very highly motivated young men. You're all smart. You're getting ready for college. You know, you have brothers and sisters that I've taken on, you know, tons of trips to go see all these colleges, and you haven't had that opportunity. I mean, we had a bunch scheduled, and then the world shut down. Is that impeding your search for a college? How's that affecting that?
I think it's definitely hurting. I can't go look at the actual campuses in person, so I can definitely do the online and the virtual tours and do the virtual information sessions, but it's really not the same thing as sitting there. And then I think another big thing, both the end of last year and this semester, is I can't talk to my guidance counselors at all. I can email them, but they only answer emails like 2 hours a day. And then the rest of the time, they're stuck doing whatever. And so I think that's going to be a big problem, is I'm not going to be able to have the support from my school that I normally would. And I think that's going to be very difficult for us transitioning into college.
Right. Now, not only that, but this is your senior year, right? Normally a pretty exciting time for everybody. You know, you got all kinds of things you could be doing in your senior year. You're the king of the hill, so to speak, the king and queens of the hill. You know, when you're in the high school, you've reached that. Did that go fast? Did high school go fast?
Well, I think the day-to-day definitely went slowly, sitting in class for 8 hours a day. But looking back on it, it does feel like I just moved into freshman year. And I think it's definitely going to be a very strange transition, only being in the school twice a week for half a day and not being able to see my friends most of the time or do any of the sports that we do. And so I think a lot of the after-school activities that we did that were a really big part of high school for us, those being cut out, are going to be a big change for us.
Right, so immediately you have a national champion marching band that you're part of. You're also part of the track and field team. Your other friends are part of track and field and football and all these other sports. And, you know, how are you guys making up for that? Are you making up for that?
Well, I don't know if we're really going to be making up for it, but I know a lot of the faculty at my school is trying really hard to give us anything we can. So I know the Shore Conference, which is the local sports conference for high schools, they're doing the best they can to schedule any kind of games. They have shortened seasons. And so I feel really bad for a lot of the seniors. It's their final. It's their last season. And they can't really play for a championship. They don't have a shot to get what they've worked for the last 4 years.
You're absolutely right. And we have a cousin in our family, a young man, was on a high school football team. It was his senior year. It was really great. And they were looking forward to graduation. And the graduation was a drive-up thing, right? You drove up. I guess you got out of your car. They handed you your diploma. You got back in, you know, make sure you were bundled up so that COVID didn't kill you on the football field. And they drove away. And that's one of the things that we're hearing a lot of the politicians here in the Northeast say, is that those high school graduations and those graduation parties are really part of the big problem now, of the resurgence of the COVID. Do you guys talk about COVID? Is that something you're concerned about at your age? Do you discuss it? Are you worried about it?
Well, I think we only really discuss it in terms of like what we can't do because of it. You know, we can't go out to restaurants and hang out. We can't do this and that. And so I think that's really the only context where we bring it up. We don't talk much about the actual disease or what's going on. It's really just how it's affecting us.
Right. Now, in your school, were there anybody who got COVID and got sick? Do you know anybody who had a serious problem with it?
I don't know, but I heard that someone in the school district might have tested positive, but that was all the way back in the beginning of March.
Well, as far as that's concerned, we're in a pretty big area. There's a lot of people that live here, right? We have tons of people living here. And I know of a couple of older people who have had COVID and a couple of them who've actually survived it. Nobody really my age do I know that had COVID. And like I said, we're a well-populated area. So Are you guys thinking that this is a real thing, or is this something you think is political at your age? What is it you're looking at? How are you putting this into context in your life, if you are at all?
I don't think that many people really have too much of an opinion on it. I think that at this point, it's just the same kind of news cycle every day, and we've kind of tuned it out. But I think in general, we all think that it's a little bit overblown. And we could probably be getting back to school pretty safely. We could probably be doing a lot more things than we really are. And I think that is really unfortunate that we won't be able to.
Right. Well, let's talk about that for a second, going back to school. So I know, you know, you were on the block scheduling. And for anybody who doesn't know what block scheduling is, instead of having, you know, 7 or 8 courses every day throughout the whole school year, you had 4 classes basically for the first half of the year and then 4 for the second half. So you had more time in the classroom for each block of instruction. So you learned a little bit more. I thought it was a little bit better. I know you guys kind of like it. Now, what are they talking about for a schedule? What's your week going to look like going back to school, if you actually get back? They haven't decided yet.
Well, it seems like if we're going back, then we're going to be doing a split schedule. So the first half of students will go in for the first half of the day Monday and Wednesday. The second half will go in the first half of the day Tuesday, Thursday. And then everyone will do the second half of every day online and every other day and Friday online. So every class will only be meeting once in person. And I think that's really going to be detrimental to a lot of students who need the extra instruction in the classroom and need to be able to stay after to get extra help. And I think that's really going to hurt a lot of students' grades. And I think it's really going to mess up a lot of, especially younger students who are trying to figure out how to transition into high school and are having a hard time with that.
So, Jack, how do you think that's really affecting what you're going to be doing, this transition? Everybody's talking about it, the online learning and the meetings, the computer meetings and all that. Does that have the same value to you as a student? I mean, obviously, you're a very high-end student. You're a very smart guy. Are you getting anything out of it, or is it worthwhile or not? What do you think?
Well, I think they're definitely not doing the same thing they did second semester of last year, which was just posting assignments and people complete them whenever. I think they're moving just to lecture style online, and I think that's going to be a big problem because everything that a lot of these teachers have learned over the past 10, 15 years about teaching is really going right out the window. And I think especially for younger students, that's going to be a problem. You know, middle schoolers, elementary schoolers, it's going to be tough to lecture to them for 8 hours a day, especially online.
Right. Now, what about for you? When you're sitting, you're watching the computer screen and the teacher is teaching. Are some teachers really good and engaging and other teachers are not so engaging? Or, I mean, how do you see that? Is there, if you could tell a teacher out there listening right now, I have to do this year for high school kids, what is something you would tell them to make their class better?
Well, I've never done an online lecture style class. They didn't have that set up last year. But I think it's going to be, obviously some teachers are going to be better at it. Some are going to be more engaging. But I think it's going to be a real problem for some. And a lot of my classes weren't lecture style. We did a lot of work in groups. We did a lot of hands-on work with the teacher. And I think that we're obviously not going to be able to get any of that. And it's going to be very difficult for us to really bounce back and have the same level of education.
Okay. So that's an interesting point. I mean, I do a lot of online training now because I teach to police officers and I go to schools and I teach the school people how to be safe and secure. And I know both of my business entities have been shut down. I mean, police are not going to outside training. So we are transitioning to online training and we have webinars and we're doing, you know, video training and all of that to try and make up for that market. And I think that's probably going to be a wave of the future. Now, your sister's in college. She's going to be a junior this year in college. And they've already advised her that, just so you know, the college is going to open, but all your classes for the first semester are online. And when you go home for Thanksgiving break, you're not coming back until the end of January. Because I guess they don't want people traveling and, you know, want to give you time to get home and make sure you're not sick. With you guys not having all of that interaction, like you're talking about, that connection to each other, limited sports stuff, do you feel you're going to be, you know, permanently damaged by that? Or is it something that's just a disappointment? It didn't work out the way you always imagined it would?
Well, I don't think I'm going to personally be permanently damaged, but I know there's a lot of kids who depend on sports in their senior season to get into good colleges. They're waiting to get recruited, and I think that's definitely going to hurt them quite a bit. And then on the education side, I think it's going to be very difficult for some students to be able to handle it. And so it's one thing teaching the police this and that, You know, but every student, if they need to learn calculus, they learn it in a very different way. And so the teacher needs to be able to cater to each student's needs. And so that's what I really liked about my teacher last year. And he wouldn't be able to do something like that this year because he can only speak to everybody at the same time. And it's very difficult for you to stay after to get extra help or to have a meeting with him in person.
So they haven't set anything up for that, like one-on-one if you needed it? Or could you call them and do a meeting on the computer one-on-one? Or they haven't come up with that yet?
We might be able to, but I think before, when you could spend 4 or 5 minutes with them during class, when they were done lecturing, I think that's going to be much harder to organize that with the 19, 20 kids in each classroom, having to do a separate online meeting for all of them. And so I think it's going to be very difficult to kind of transition from the teaching style that we're used to into what we're going to be doing now.
Well, let's talk about a little inconvenience that they're talking about, that either the teacher and the students or just the students are going to have to wear, you know, these face masks. Is that something, how do you think you're going to do wearing a face mask from 7 a.m. until 2:30 in the afternoon inside a building with a million other people? You looking forward to that, or what is that?
Well, I think it's certainly going to be an inconvenience. I'm not too worried about high school students. I think they'll be able to handle it. Again, what I'm worried about would be kindergarten students and first and second graders. It's going to be very difficult for them to try and learn that as a new normal. I think it's definitely going to be tough for us to do, but I don't think it's going to be too bad. Especially if you get a good mask you can breathe in, it won't be the worst thing.
No, that's pretty optimistic that you got there. And it's interesting. You're always worried about these younger kids and younger students. I think that speaks to your character, first of all. But as far as you, if you could do, like, the pandemic ends tomorrow, what's the first thing you're going to do when the pandemic ends? What is there anything that you want to do or go somewhere?
I don't think there's anywhere that I'd really like to go, but I think it would just be exciting to have my whole year put back on track. You know, being able to have all my sports set up, being able to go, you know, as a team, going out after a meet or whatever, go into a restaurant and sitting together. And so I think those are the things that I'm kind of missing. It's not really one big thing that I would like to go back to.
Now, currently you're dating a very nice young lady and you've managed to go out, right? You guys get to go out and go to dinner and stuff? I mean, what's that been like?
Well, normally we'd sit at the outdoor dining, or if they don't have much room, we'll get takeout and we'll go sit somewhere. We'll set up a blanket on the ground or chairs that I have in the back of my car. And so that hasn't been too bad. We're still able to get out. We're still able to do things. But I think it's going to be a lot harder organizing that with more people, because I don't think a whole lot of people are doing that right now.
All right. Jack, I really appreciate your insights, and I hope the Chasing Justice audience like hearing from somebody who's really on the front lines. I appreciate your time, and a lot to think about for all of us as our kids go back to school, whether it's college or high school or middle school or kindergarten. So we'll be back in a minute. This is Lieutenant Joe Pangaro with Chasing Justice. Thank you, Jack.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
All right, everyone. Welcome back to Chasing Justice here on round three. Ding, ding, ding. I want to say a big shout out to all the boys in the neighborhood and the girls in the neighborhood out there who have been absent for a while due to the outbreak of the COVID and the continuing recovery. You know, one of the things we talk about with freedom is that restricted freedom. Well, restricted the freedom of the neighborhood guys to get together. We tried the Zoom thing, you know, and it's okay. It's just, it's not the same as having the fellas in the same room with me, you know, interacting with each other. So we're going to try and get that together. All of us have been healthy, so that's good. Now, what's your life going to look like going down the road, talking about freedom? Let's put this election into context a little bit of how it's going to relate to your freedom. So I've already made my prediction that come the end of November 3rd, when you wake up in the morning on November 4th, the day after the election, there could be a couple of outcomes. One, the election is overwhelming one way or another. in the States, and we see a clear winner by 11, 12 o'clock at night. Joe Biden has met the expectation of all the polls that have been saying he's 20 points up. It's going to be an overwhelming rout for Joe Biden and the Socialist Democratic Party who want to take over America and change our lives. And all of you have voted for that. That's one possibility. The other possibility is it's the other way. The silent majority, the groups of people out there who support President Trump, but will not say so publicly, will not put signs on their cars, will not put signs at their house, will not publicly come out and state that because of the repercussions that you get from people on the left. Now, when people say they're for Biden, nobody goes and bashes in their car windows, nobody cuts their tires, nobody smashes, throw paintballs at their house. That happens from the left to the right. So we want to keep that in mind as we're going forward. So if Trump wins, I predict when you wake up in the morning, go back a little bit. If it's overwhelming and we can say that President Trump wins at 11 or 12 o'clock at night because that silent majority has come pouring out to go in and vote for the president, then I think we will see the violence that we've already seen in some of our states and cities. I think we will see that spread exponentially in the course of those hours from the time you hear Fox News, CNN, ABC can now say that President Trump has won a second term. Now, of course, if it was Fox News, it would go something like this. At this point, Fox News can say definitively that President Trump has been reelected to a second term, and he's going to start off on his agenda of making America great again and keeping America great, starting first thing in the morning. If it's CNN or MSNBC or any one of the other liberal left-wing networks, it would sound something like this. We can't believe this can't be right. I think we have to report. I don't want to report it, but I think we have to report that, oh my God, Trump has been reelected to another term. America is at an end. Oh, I can't go on. The humanity. I mean, it's probably what you'll hear. Maybe not in such drastic terms, but there'll be a completely different way of looking at it from one side to the other. If Joe Biden wins, I think people on the right will be extremely disappointed and will have a heightened sense of fear of what the future brings for them and what the future brings for their freedom and the value of freedom. Because while Joe Biden might be elected president, it is not Joe Biden who's actually going to run things. I think anyone in their right mind can tell that the man has serious mental issues. He is not going to be creating policy. He's not going to be running the government. He'll be the visible head of the government for as many times as they can trot him out there, and he can give his 2 or 3 minute commentary. But I think it will be probably many of the people from the Obama administration and his vice president, whoever that is, which will be picked by the Obama administration people, to immediately go in and start this change. Yeah, if he is elected, I believe he will get the Congress and he may get the Senate. If people are following what the polls are saying right now, which I don't believe the polls until really close to the election, because you can really twist a poll depending on the question you ask. How many people are surveyed? You know, that they go in and they go, let's find likely voters, people who vote in the last 5 elections, whether it's for dog catcher, president, senator, whatever. If you vote constantly, you're a pretty likely voter. And then let's say, okay, well, they go by registration. There's more Democrats registered than Republicans. So they say, we'll do 38% Democrats and 14% Republicans. And of course, it comes out with a huge twist the other way. How about you just find likely voters across the country and get a poll of them? Who are you voting for? Now, unfortunately, not a lot of people will say Trump. They'll go in the booth and push the button, but they're not going to say it because we've just been trained like wearing the mask. We've all been trained that sometimes you just better keep your mouth shut because bad things can happen to you if you say you are for the Constitution, you know, that horrible document of oppression. You could have a problem. If you say you're for America, you know, that horrible place that should be torn apart, you're going to suffer the consequence. You might lose your job if you say you are for America and for what goes on in America. And I don't mean the bad things. I mean the good thing. Even it doesn't matter. You have got to be against America now. How about if you come out and say you should stand and honor our military during the national anthem? You could technically lose your job in some places for because you know what? That's a horrible thing to say. Don't you realize how bad America is to certain people? And people can't stand it. And now there's a chance for all of us to say how horrible it was. And you won't? Well, we can't have you here, right? Is that your freedom being attacked? Can you stand up now on your soapbox, on the corner, in your public square, and declare your opinions on anything, right, wrong, or indifferent? Can you do that? Oh, I think you probably can initially go do it. Physically, you can do it. But what will be your consequences? Will people look at you because you said something off color, or if you said something offensive, or if you said something ugly? And will they look at you and say, well, that person is an idiot. I don't like what they said. I won't listen to them again. Or will they say, that person is ugly. That was offensive. That was inappropriate. We got to destroy them. They can't have a job. They shouldn't live in our community. We should ban them. We should go after their family. We should attack their home. We should destroy everything they're about. Yes, that's where we live now. That is where we live now, like it or not. And this election is going to decide how that plays out going forward. You know, where are we going to be on November 4th? So this is where I think if it's Joe Biden, people on the right will be disappointed and start to be afraid for what their future is going to look like. Because he's already said he's going to raise your taxes, get rid of the Trump tax cuts, which, again, anybody with a brain is going to tell you that that's going to drive the economy into the ground further than it already is now. It's not going to recover. So millions of people will stay out of work. And when you're out of work and you have nothing to do and you need things, you see violence goes up. If Trump wins, I think we see that violence in the street. The screaming Karens that are losing their minds, screaming at everyone and sticking their faces in people's faces and burning places down and shooting randomly and destroying property and toppling statues. I think we see that in a frenzy, either starting the night when they announce it or the next morning when the results come out. I think that's what we're in store for here in America. I don't think we've ever really had that kind of a moment before. And I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm completely wrong. But in your heart of hearts, doesn't it feel like I'm probably right? You know, you see the way they react now, the people on the left, to things. President says he's going to cut taxes and they go nuts. They scream and holler. They go crazy. He says he cares about everybody, that unemployment is down for all of our minority communities. And people call him a liar and go absolutely out of their minds. So what can we do when he is reelected in their face and they realize that there are millions of people out there who agree with him that they don't know who they are? You know, they went out and they tried to do the spying the first time. You don't think they're going to be doing that a second time, maybe? I don't know. I hope I'm wrong about that. But that's my prediction. If Biden wins, people on the right, traditional Americans who want capitalist freedom will start to worry and start to make plans for the violence that's coming. And I think if President Trump is reelected, the people on the left will lose their collective minds and we will see a violent outburst, a violent eruption starting immediately after the election, probably like nothing we've ever seen before. And then what do we do? How do we respond to that? Well, let's see. We've neutered our police. We're defunding our police. We've cut our police down. They can't go out and protect us. They're not allowed, or we'll indict them and put them in prison. I don't know. How do you defend yourself? Well, probably you shouldn't defend yourself. Matter of fact, here in my pages of outrages, we see the Minneapolis police coming out with some advice. And I think this advice is pertinent to the situation. I think it's also a portent for the future. The Minneapolis police have come out and given advice to the citizens of Minneapolis. They are saying that if you are a victim of crime, a robbery, some other type of a physical crime, you should prepare to give in to the criminal. You should give up your wallet. You should give up your purse. You should give up your car. Whatever it is you have, your iPhone, your regular phone, whatever kind of phone you got, you should prepare to just give that up because it's probably safer. You know, you still might get shot, stabbed, or killed. But if you give that stuff up readily, you probably stand a better chance than if you try and fight back and protect yourself. And don't look around for the police. There ain't going to be no police. So this is a portend, I think, for the future, that we look and see when our police agencies are now telling us your best course of action would be to just give in to the criminals. Does that sound like freedom, ladies and gentlemen? Does that sound like a wonderful, tremendous life where people are going to want to visit our country, visit your state, visit your city, spend their money? That's frightening to hear a police department come out and give you advice. And I think it's probably, it serves two purposes for them. One, they're trying to make a statement that, hey, look what they're doing to us, police department. We can't really protect you, so you should just give in to crime. And number two, they're trying to help people because they're telling them they're defunding our police department. We're not going to be available to help you. So if somebody wants something from you, you should probably just give it to them. Don't get yourself hurt over a phone or your money or your wallet or your ID or your car or whatever it is that they want from you. You should probably just give it to them. And, you know, you can make a police report, probably online, make a police report and describe it. And, you know, then you'll have your report. And that's probably about the essence of it. That is going to spread across the United States. It's already spreading to other cities that are like that, where you don't really have the protection you need. And whose fault is that? Is that the fault of the politicians that are allowing it, that are pushing it? Or is that our fault for not flooding out into the streets and demanding that they turn this around? Is it our fault for not protecting each other, for not standing together, that we're not going to stand for crime? You know, that's these are important questions, that the dawning of that new day is coming. And I'm not being pessimistic about it. I'm being a realist about this. As we move closer and closer to this coming election, and it's the results of the election. You know, if President Trump loses, he loses and he moves on to his lifestyle, where they will probably go after him criminally. They probably won't stop, because even though there's been a precedent that you really don't go after past presidents, and he's respecting that up to the point of Barack Obama at this point, I don't think if the left takes over and wins that they will respect that. I think they will go after him. There will be so much pressure and they will be so drunk with power that anything they can find to indict him for, and then have one of these crazy prosecutors somewhere issue a warrant and have him frog march somewhere, will be literally the biggest statue toppling that the world has ever seen, an American president arrested. And I think it's a real possibility. Is that your freedom? Is that what freedom looks like in America? You realize that as you hear me say this, if you're laughing and chuckling, saying, "Lieutenant Joe, that's ridiculous. That will never happen." I hope you're right. I hope it never does happen. I hope we never see a thing like that, because that in itself would be a change for mankind. And I don't mean about Trump. It's not about Trump. It's about what he represents. If America falls, if our freedoms fall, if our freedoms take second place to the desires and whims of those radicals who want to change everything, then America truly is done already. So this election could not be more important. I personally believe at this point, I feel the same kind of thing I felt in 2016, that the undercurrent was that there's a lot of people out here who are silent, that no matter what they say publicly or whatever, are going to go in and push that lever for Trump, because they don't want this country to end. They don't want mob rule. They don't want socialism. They don't want AOC and her group calling the shots on how we run our country, who does what, who gets what. They don't want our property divided as they see fit. They don't want our income taken as they see fit to do what they think is best with it. I think there's a majority out here that want America to remain. Do we want to fix the problems that we do have? I think we do. I know I do. I think we need to all open our eyes, listen to each other, and fix what we can fix. Because we can change some things. You know, we've learned. We grow. That's the beauty of our country. That's why we continue to evolve. But if we allow this horror to come upon us, that we don't get out and vote, maybe the polls are right. Maybe people just really do prefer that false sense of security of a government cradle to grave that will take care of them. And this time, when the socialists do it, they'll do it right this time. It'll be fair and equal, and everyone will have a great life, and it'll be wonderful. Wouldn't that be utopian? Wouldn't that be a utopian future? How wonderful that would be if that's what happened. Do you believe that's what's going to happen if the socialists take over here in America? Isn't that strange that we're even talking about that so seriously? But we are. We've reached that moment in history. We've reached that watershed place in the history of human endeavor, where America is either going to maintain and rise back up to where she should be, or she's going to fall and become a memory in the history book. And remember who writes the history books? The winners. So the winners will write America off as what a horrible, terrible experiment it was in humanity. And now the government and our commandante are going to lead us into the future. Our great leaders will now provide us with the life we all deserve. Is that what you want to wake up to on November 4th? I do not. I don't think we will wake up to that. I think there are more of us out here who want America, capitalism, freedom. We want our freedom. We value our freedom. Our freedom is what has made us exceptional in all of humankind. Our freedom is what will guide us to a better place. Our freedom is what will enlighten us to change the things that need to be changed. And our freedom will hopefully heal all the wounds of our country. So I leave it to you, ladies and gentlemen, here in Chasing Justice Land, to pray for our country, pray for our president, pray for our people, and always remember, be a part of the solution and not a part of the problem. So, until we meet again, thank you for being here. I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangara for Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network.